Well, let's go to the second study, Our Glorious Baptist Heritage. Okay. Roman numeral 1, Baptists are not Protestants. We get called Protestants by people all the time because to most people they're Protestants and Catholics, and so since we're obviously not Catholic, we must be Protestant, but we're not. When some historians and Bible teachers call Baptists Protestants, they're completely ignoring the record of history. The Baptist churches, the ones we call Baptists today, the Baptist churches never identified with Rome. They never identified with Rome. We're always independent and played no part in the Reformation of the 16th century. And that isn't completely true, has been pointed out to me. We were victims during the Reformation of the 16th century, often being persecuted by the Protestants. So we did play a role in that sense, but we didn't play a positive role in the Reformation of the 16th century. All honest and competent historians, including the Protestant historians, acknowledge this. This is one of the fusses or points of complaint I would make towards the non-denominational Christian universities. They virtually all teach that Baptists are just another Protestant group. That is not accurate history. The Lutheran historian Mosheim wrote, "In the first place, the Mennonites are not altogether in the wrong when they boast of a descent from these Waldenses, Petrobrusians, and others who are usually styled witnesses for the truth before Luther. Prior to the age of Luther, there lay concealed in almost every country of Europe, but especially in Bohemia, Moravia, Switzerland, Germany, very many persons in whose minds were deeply rooted that principle which the Waldenses, Wycliffites, and the Hussites maintain, some more covertly, others more openly, namely that the kingdom which Christ set up on earth of the visible church is an assembly of holy persons, ought therefore to be entirely free from not only ungodly persons and sinners, but from all institutions of human device against ungodliness." So what were they saying? Saying these churches had stood for a regenerated church membership. They didn't believe they had just had anybody in church member, and they felt they should be free from the attempts of the government to control things. Okay? Those are two Baptist distinctives. This principle lay at the foundation which was the source of all that was new and singular in the religion of the Mennonites, and the greatest part of their singular opinions, as is well attested, were approved some centuries before Luther's time by those who had such views of the Church of Christ. Whereas the Protestant version of church history is this. The early church is the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church becomes more and more corrupt. It is everybody was Catholic until the 1500s, and then the Reformers came out of the Catholic Church. That's not history at all. There were always movements, good and bad, that were not part of the Catholic Church. In fact, there were lots of people. We'll see in a bit, at one point in England, one of the Catholic observers said about 50% of the people of England were not Catholic. Okay? The idea that everybody was Catholic for these centuries until the Reformation came does not have any sense of truth to it. There were all kinds of independent groups, including the worst heretical groups, but they were independent of Catholicism, as well as folks who were close to the truth and in folks who practice all of the distinctives that we have labeled. There were all kinds of folks independent of Catholicism. And this Lutheran historian, Mosheim, writes, talking about the Mennonites, which were one of the groups that believed the Baptist distinctives, said they claimed heritage from an earlier moment. They said they're not wrong. There were things they had in common with groups that came before them. That's from a Lutheran historian. If you're ever near Valdese, North Carolina, small town in North Carolina, it is worth spending a day there. And Valdese is is a memorial, two things. Valdese was started by Waldensians who came to the United States in the 1900s, later, early 1900s. I'm not sure exactly what the timing on that is. But they were folks who had came from the Alps in northern Italy. They had had independent churches there all through the ages. And there is a memorial there. There's both a museum and a memorial to the Waldenses. During the summer, on Friday and Saturday nights, they have a play that is extraordinarily well done. It's gone. They've had it for years and years and years, showing the experiences of the Waldenses being persecuted by the Catholic Church for having independent churches and preaching the gospel. And it's extremely politically incorrect because it's a very anti-Catholic play, but for a reason. And the play depicts, you go into the Trail of Faith, which is really worth the time to be at. And the first thing you go to, there's a building and it has this big room and it has this scale relief map, which is, you know, one with depth and dimension of the Alps Mountains. And by it are the numbers 1 through 36. And if you press number 1, lights come on to show you every place that was persecuted during the first wave of persecution. Okay? There are 36 waves. Press the second button and lights come on everywhere that was persecuted during the second wave, all the way through number 36. The play consists of a retelling of actual events from the 36th persecution. And it's done so well, it makes an impact on you when you're sitting in the seats. For example, they're showing what happens in one home, and there's a mother and a father, and they have a little baby, and they're Waldenses, and the Catholics are after them. And they have man and a woman and a real baby in there. But they get your attention to an event over here. And while you're watching the event over here, they substitute a doll for the real baby. And as happened in real life, then the scene comes back over here, and the soldiers come in, and they bayonet the baby. And it is so real, there are people standing up in the seats, you know, just impacted by this and wanting to stop it. And then you go in the Trail of Faith. They have several places for you to go. You go from the place where you see the relief map of the Alps. And you go to just a number of things. One is an example, is a replica of a cave where in one of the Waldensian towns they hid. And it was standard practice. They're up in the mountains. They can often see the persecutors coming. The men would take off and make sure they were seen so the soldiers would follow them. There was a cave the women and children hid in. And this had happened during several invasions. So they have a replica of the cave. But on the 36th invasion, they found the cave. They ordered the women and children to come out, and they wouldn't. And so they set fire, a big fire, to the entryway to the cave to fill the cave with smoke. And the smoke, the folks in there had a choice between crawling out, in which case they got bayoneted, or staying in and dying from the smoke. When the men of the town came back, they found that most of the women and children, few of them had tried to crawl out and were bayoneted. Most of them were just huddled together, dead from smoke inhalation. And there's a replica of that, and it will grab you. There's a replica of their Bible college, in case you might be interested how they did Bible college. And they had Bible colleges, and when a young man went there, said he was called to preach. He went for 3 years, full-time, 12 months. For 3 years. And one of your assignments each year was you had to make a handwritten copy of the entire Bible. Number one, that writing out the Bible three times will teach you some about the Bible. Number two, they didn't have any printing. So when you wrote out a copy, it became yours. Then you had your own Bible as a pastor. And the first and second copy were given to missionaries to give away to people on missions trips. So that's what you did in the morning. You made your own handwritten copy of the entire scripture from Genesis to Revelation. In the afternoon, you had teachers that taught you. Okay. And interestingly enough, they invented paper mache. You know how you make stuff and you use it in props. It looks like rocks or whatever, and it's really just paper, but it looks like rocks. And it was the Bible college students' job when an invading army came in to grab the Bibles. And in this rocky hillside, they had big paper mache rocks. At a distance, you couldn't tell the difference. And they would hide the Bible in those hollow paper rocks. They'd hide the Bibles. And there was such a large mountainous rocky area, they rarely went to look for them because there was so much you had to cover. So it was their job to see to it the Bible survived. And that is why papier-mâché was invented as a hiding place in the mountains for Bibles. But in the Bible college was would be built two stories. And in the first story, there would be livestock. The reason for that being, during the winter when it was cold, the body heat of the livestock would come up and warm the second floor. That was your heating system. And in the replica of the Bible College, there's a series of pictures that come from a book called The Martyr's Mirror. And The Martyr's Mirror were drawings done by an artist who pencil sketchings done by someone who went with the invading troops, and he did pencil sketchings of the way they treated the people. And those families, often big families, they take a family of 10 and say, okay, kill one of your children. If you kill one, we'll let the other 8 go. And most families chose to all die together rather than to go through that. They tortured people in ways that are unimaginable. I have taken tours through the Trail of Faith, and I do not even allow the ladies to go in that room. These are actual reproductions of pencil sketches that were taken as these things were happening. And some of the horrible ways they tortured men and women both. I say, when I take tours, I don't even allow the ladies to go in that room and see it. But if you talk to these people, and then there's a museum. They have a museum of things from the Waldenses. Museums, separate location, separate leadership. But if you talk to them, and I have met with them and met with the leaders, and they've let me go through the rare book room in the museum and various other things. When you talk to them, they will tell you. You ask them, when did the Waldenses start? They'll say when the Apostle Paul was on his way to Rome. He preached here and churches were formed. And they will tell you without blushing that their movement, their independent churches, go back to the Apostle Paul. And it is just a fascinating place to go through. There are various things. They were originally in that town. If you've seen Sara Lee Bakeries, Sara Lee was the bakery in that town. Sara Lee was a Waldensian baker. And so they show you their way of baking. Now, they sold out to some big food corporation a long time ago. But Sara Lee was originally Waldensian bakers. And they show you how they did school. It's fascinating how they did school. You go in and it's the one-room schoolhouse. But all around the walls are bunks. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 bunks high. And so when they had nap time, you crawled into one of those bunks on the walls around the side. And the older you were, the bigger you were, the bigger had to take the bunks that were higher. So some of them will be a little bit longer. And so that's just what the whole room is all the way around. Bunks, because they considered a nap during the middle of school day to be really important. And the more I looked at that, the more I thought that was reasonable. We might learn something from that. But so they have a school, you know. I mean, it was amazing, the situation. But if you talk to those folks and their leadership, they will tell you they go back to the Apostle Paul, and they believe that. And they will show you in the rare book room, they'll say, well, this is something from this church in 300 AD, this church in this spot in 300 AD. And they believe that firmly, and I think they're probably right. So don't tell them they were ever part of Catholicism. They were the victims of Catholicism to the extreme. So much so that the Catholics invaded their mountains 36 times, the last time in the 1600s. So try telling them they were part of the Catholic Church, and you're not going to get very far. Now, there are a lot of other groups, and we're going to be mentioning a number of them that illustrate that, but they are unique to me because they have a museum and a memorial here in the United States. And the town of Valdez, North Carolina, was originally a group of those people moving to the United States. That's where it came from, originally. And they have a big Waldensian church. But the leaders of the memorial and the museum will not go to church there, because the Waldensian church there uses the Revised Standard Version. And this is what they told me. They said, we had Latin Bibles, but our Latin Bibles match the King James Bible. And so they won't go to a church using the Revised Standard Version. Most of them go, not all of them, but most of them go to a Baptist church in the town because it uses the King James Bible and because it maintains their heritage. But even the Waldensian church is worth going to because it's all stained glass windows, and every window is a scene from one of the times of persecution that the Waldensians went through. So even the Waldensian church, which isn't that fundamental today, is worth the time to go through. And they have times when it's open for people to go through and look at all the windows and so forth, which I have done. Everything we call the Baptist distinctives was believed by those folks, some of them. Because they were independent churches, each church made its own decision about what it believed. So there's several different doctrinal statements. And so today, Methodists claim the Waldensians, and Presbyterians claim the Waldensians, and Baptists claim the Waldensians. So I was very curious about that, and I can understand why. Each church had its own doctrinal statement. Some of them could really be called Methodist, based on what they believed. Some could be called Presbyterian, based on what they believed. And some could legitimately be called Baptist, based on what they believe. So that's why everybody tries to claim them. Everybody can find a doctrinal statement that matches what they believe. They were independent churches. What does an independent church believe? Whatever it chooses to believe. Nobody can tell it what to believe. They were all independent. Well, the Quaker, Robert Barclay, wrote, "We shall afterwards show the rise of the Anabaptists that took place prior to the Reformation of the Church of England. There are also reasons for believing that on the continent of Europe, small hidden Christian societies who've held many of the opinions of the Anabaptists have existed from the times of the apostles. In the sense of the direct transmission of divine truth and the true nature of spiritual religion, it seems probable that these churches have a lineage or succession more ancient than that of the Roman church." You really can find, as you go back in church history, there are what people call the old evangelical church, people that preach the gospel and were loosely tied to the Catholic Church. But you also find many independent movements. Some of them were heretical, but some of them were pretty good students of the Word of God. The great scientist Sir Isaac Newton was also a theological student and a church historian. His study led him to state that it was his conviction that, and this is a quote, "the Baptists were the only Christians who had not symbolized with Rome." In other words, when the state church began to be formed, which we're going to study pretty shortly here, when the state church began to be formed, there were churches that never went into it. He's calling them Baptists. Frank S. Mead, Handbook of Denominations. Remember I told you this, I was reading his Handbook of Denominations when I began to develop convictions about being a Baptist. He wrote, "It's often heard among them they have no founder but Christ, and that Baptists have been preaching and practicing from the days of John the Baptist. That is true in a limited sense. There were certainly men and women holding what have come to be considered distinctly Baptist principles all across the years." I'm sitting on and getting on an airplane, flying from Denver to Orlando. And I notice, you know, that most airlines, you have the three seats. Next to me, the two seats next to me, are two famous Bible Presbyterian authors. I have these men's books. I recognize them from their pictures on their books. So I introduce myself, and we're talking. And one of them looks at me and says, "You're not one of those Baptists who think you go back to John the Baptist, are you?" I said, "No, sir. We go back to John the Presbyterian." He just looked at me. I said, "Oh, wait a minute. I must be wrong. There is no John the Presbyterian. Okay. Baptist principles go back a long way. There's a reason why they call John the Baptist, because of what he taught about baptism." And again, I didn't say this to them. I'm a nice guy. But in their mind, baptism was sprinkling. And of course, again, as we discussed yet, we all know why John the Baptist walked out into the Jordan River so that he could sprinkle people. Okay? That would indeed be John the Presbyterian. Okay? But I know of no record of a John the Presbyterian. So I'll have to stick with John the Baptist. Historian Robert Lane Fox, this is a secular historian in the book Pagans and Christians. Robert Lane Fox understands the antiquity of the Baptists. He writes, during the second and third centuries, groups of Baptists could be found in the district between the mouths of the Euphrates and Tigris rivers where they lived under the nominal control of the Parthians. He says something similar several times in this secular history book. And people say, well, how can you say these folks were Baptists? They didn't use that name. Robert Lane Fox, secular historian, said, they believed what Baptists believe today. He said if they were here today, you would call them Baptists. That's exactly right. 1819, two Dutch theology professors, both members of the Reformed Church, wrote about Baptist antiquity. Let me say a good word about these men. These men are hired by the King of Holland. They call him the stateholder rather than the king, but basically means the same thing. The King of Holland, to do a study to prove what's the Church of the New Testament. He was a member of the Reformed or Presbyterian Church. So when they were hired to do this study, and they were Reformed theology professors, so they're hired by a member of the Reformed Church. They're members of the Reformed Church. They're supposed to write a study. It says, what is the Church of the New Testament? What conclusion would you expect them to come to? The Reformed Church. These were honest men. They end up writing, on this account, the Baptists may be considered as the only Christian community which has stood since the days of the apostles and as a Christian society which has preserved pure the doctrines of the gospel through all the ages. Now, their credit is saying, look, the New Testament church was Baptist. Not in name or denominational identification, but in terms of what it taught. And they said that honestly, and the king went ahead and had their study printed and distributed. So you've got to give them credit for integrity on that. Even Roman Catholic historians have acknowledged the ancient nature of the Baptists. Cardinal Hosius. If the truth of religion were to be judged by the readiness and boldness of which a man of any sect shows in suffering, then the opinion and persuasion of no sect can be truer and surer than that of the Anabaptists, since there have been none for these 1,200 years past that have gone more generally punished or that have more cheerfully and steadfastly undergone and even offered themselves to the most cruel sorts of punishment than these people. Here's a Roman Catholic cardinal who in the 1500s is saying these people have been around for 1,200 years. Okay? We don't come out of the Reformation. That's not history. Historian, again, secular historian, William F. Aitney, recognized the ancient existence of Baptists. It's quite arguable that they should be regarded as representing the survival of a most primitive type of Christianity. Ancient Oriental Baptists, these people were in many respects Protestants before Protestantism. Now, I would not use that terminology, but what he's saying is they go back a long time. Okay. Well, Baptists have been called many names throughout the centuries. It's very fair and historically accurate to understand that Baptist history may be remembered in stages according to the names by which Baptist preachers were called. The first stage is the Apostolic and New Testament churches. The Apostolic and New Testament churches. And their direct successors. So first stage is the apostles, the New Testament. That we've already documented how the New Testament teaches these principles. This stage led to the Cathari, Celtic Christians, Montanus, Novatians, Donatists, and Paulicians. Okay? We're talking about 1st, 2nd, 3rd century. Now again, we said this yesterday, it's important to get this. This is where much confusion comes in. None of those groups end up at the end of their history, with the possible exception. The Celtic Christians are pretty much exterminated, so you can't say they did this, but the other groups do not end up believing the Baptist distinctives at the end of their history. At the end of the history, all these groups are heretics. In the beginning, at least some in each group believed and taught the Baptist distinctives. We'll say more about that as we go on. But you'd have to be careful. Maybe the most famous Baptist book. It's called The Trail of Blood. And it's accurate and has a chart in it that's accurate. Okay. In fact, I have a huge version of that chart. I should bring that one day and see if we can put that up for a few days. It was actually given to me in the Philippines, and it's so big I have a whole file cabinet drawer devoted to storing it. I rarely get it out, but this would be the right time to bring it out, so I'll try and do that. Remember to do that tomorrow. But the Trail of Blood is correct in describing all of these people as being holding Baptist doctrine in the beginning of their existence. It fails to mention they all changed. So sometimes people will go and say, well, here's a Montanist statement that's clearly not Baptist. Yeah, but what year did it come from? Okay. None of these groups end up holding these New Testament doctrines, but all of them start out with at least some. All of these groups have one thing in common: they believe in independent churches. And what does an independent church believe? Whatever it wants to. So all of these start out with some people holding these truths. They end up heretical. Okay. So it depends at what point in their history you're studying them. That doesn't mean every Montanist leader you'll ever read about held these truths. But Tertullian did. One of the early ones. In fact, they called him Tertullian the Baptist. Okay. Well, the second stage, the Cathari and so forth. The third stage is the Waldenses, the Lollers, the Albigenses, the Petrobrusians, the Henricians, the Arnoldists, the Berengarians, the Taborites, and the Bogomils. That should say Arnoldists there. In the fourth stage, preachers of Baptist conviction were called Anabaptists. Now they're called Baptists. People have asked me, do I think the name will change again? And I don't, for this reason. These names existed previously in regions. Okay, there's a lot of isolation between regions. And so here they'd be called Arnoldists, here they'd be called Taborites, and so forth. About the time of the invention of the printing press, we're being called Anabaptists, which means rebaptizers. And our forefathers would answer, not Anabaptist. We're not rebaptizing anybody. We're not Anabaptist. We're Baptist. And that was the name that stuck at the time of the invention of the printing press. No longer was it a regional name. Because of the printing press, the story gets spread widely. And the name stuck. So now virtually everybody anywhere in the world that believes these truths is called Baptist. So I doubt if there'll be another name change. Let's take a 10-minute break.